You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Always great to talk to Booger McFarland, ESPN NFL and college football analyst, and part of two Super Bowl champion teams. Booger joining us on the program. Good morning, Booger. How are you?
DP, what's up, buddy? How we doing?
Well, we were talking about great running backs in college and how many carries the body has in it. You know, that Christian McCaffrey banged up last year, got hurt last night. I wonder if we're going to see the same for Zeke Elliott. Like, at teams pay them, and you want to use them, but then you also have to be careful with how much you use them. What happened to the running back position?
Well, I think you guys are on to something with the carries. You know, I go back to the guys at Alabama. Remember Ingram and Richardson? They just ran those guys into the ground, and Richardson was never the same once he got in the NFL. And you know, if you look at a guy like Najee Harris, who's in Pittsburgh now. Najee wasn't used a lot early on in his career. His senior year he was. And so I'm interested to do kind of a case study to see how he fares as far as the injuries are concerned. I think you could say the same for Leonard Fournette. I mean, Les Miles never met a run he didn't like, and he ran Leonard Fournette into the ground. So I agree there's only so many carries. And I think NFL coaches have to be smart because, you know, some of these old-school coaches – want to practice full speed all week, and you know, essentially you're playing 2 to 3 games as far as the wear and tear. Now I know you're not getting hit, but you know, when you're running full speed is full speed, whether it's on Wednesday or Sunday. So yeah, these new school coaches have to do a better job of getting guys to Sunday. That's where guys like Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, I think they do a good job with some of these veteran players because they're kind of a newer school. They really are not concerned as much about having 2.5, 3-hour practices during the week.
I'm wondering if Miami, the U in 2001, didn't have the best group of running backs for one season. Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Frank Gore, Najee Davenport.
That one was good. Take a look at, I don't have it in front of me, but what about Georgia when they had Gurley, Sony Michelle, and there was another one they had. So Georgia, maybe it was Chubb?
Chubb was a freshman. Chubb was a freshman. Okay. But they had Chubb, Sony Michelle, DeAndre Swift at the same time. USC had Reggie Bush and Lendale White. Oklahoma State had Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders. SMU, Eric Dickerson, Craig James. Auburn in 2004, Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown. Arkansas, 2007, Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, and Peyton Hillis. Who's the best running back you ever faced in college?
Wow. College? I would probably say Stephen Davis. Remember the big running back from Auburn, Stephen Davis? Yeah, he was a load to deal with because not only was he fast, man, but the dude was 235, 240 pounds. Yeah, him, and I'm trying to think who else. Yeah, he was about the only one, you know, because I didn't go against guys like James Stewart and Aaron Hayden that were at Tennessee. I didn't get a chance to see those guys. I missed those guys during the SEC cycle.
Do you think that we'll see a running back drafted in the top 10 over the next 10 years?
No, because I think that position has kind of – I'm not going to say it's devalued, but you realize even if you get one in the later rounds, the talent gap is not going to be astronomical. And so I think, therefore, why would you waste a top 10 pick on a running back, i.e. Leonard Fournette? Even Ezekiel Elliott has only given you about 2 or 3 prime years. And now I think Tony Pollard is a more explosive back in Dallas. So I doubt it. Maybe at the end of the first round, you may get one kind of like a Najee Harris around 22, 23. But I definitely don't think you're going to see one in the top 10 picks because the quarterbacks are too valuable, offensive linemen are too valuable, defensive linemen are too valuable, and running backs come a dime a dozen.
Yeah, but why is it that you can always find a running back? You don't say that. Maybe you say it about offensive linemen, but it feels like you can always find a running back.
Because I think when you look at the skill position and how guys are groomed and how guys are created in college and high school, everyone wants to play running back. So you get a lot of the best athletes playing that position. And so the volume of running backs to choose from is more plentiful than, say, a great quarterback, because you can only have one quarterback on the team that's going to play at one time. or a great offensive tackle. Like, who wants to play offensive tackle in high school? Like, none of the girls want to date the offensive tackle. We all want the guy that touches the football and runs the ball. So I think that has something to do with it. Plus, I mean, let's face it. This is a 7-on-7 sport now, Dan. It's quarterbacks and receivers and tight ends. Even a tight end like a George Kittle, who is a two-way tight end that can block and catch. Like, those guys are being phased out a little bit. Like, blocking is not cool anymore. It's, hey, throw me the ball, let me catch, let me play DB where I can pick the balls off and go to the end zone. So it is a true 7-on-7 sport now that happens to have a few defensive and offensive linemen in it.
You can only watch one this weekend: Chargers, Chiefs, Buccaneers, Rams, Packers, Niners.
To me, that's easy. It's going to be Bucs, Rams, because I think that if both teams play at a high level, you could be looking at an NFC championship game. And I really want to see what Matthew Stafford is going to do, because, Dan, think about the narrative. Is Matthew Stafford a good player, or should I say a great player that was in a bad organization in Detroit and never could kind of get his just due? Or was he a good player that just never could get the organization over the top? We're going to find out, because he said, not his words, mine, he said, I want to play in big games. Yeah. I want to be in games that matter. Well, guess what, Matthew Stafford? You got your wish, buddy, because this is a huge game. Tom Brady, the Buccaneers, arguably the most talented team in football, coming to your house, okay, traveling across the country, and you're going to stare the GOAT toe-to-toe. So we're going to find out whether Matthew Stafford can take the first step into what he talked about, which is playing in these huge games.
I felt like the media overreacted week one with the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. I didn't expect them to beat the Saints. I didn't expect them to play that poorly. But I think they overreacted in beating the Lions, because I expected them to beat the Lions. I think this is probably more of a litmus test, you know, facing the Niners on the road than the first 2 weeks. What do you how do you break down this game?
Here's the way I look at the Packers. The Packers are not as bad as they were in week one. They're not as good as they were in week two. If you look at their defense is not as good. Za'Darius Smith, he's injured, so they don't have any pass rush. Now, if you don't have any pass rush, what does that mean, Dan? That means that the back end of your defense, the secondary, is going to be exposed. And we saw Tom Brady expose his secondary in the NFC Championship game. Well, guess what? Other than Jaire Alexander, this is not a very good secondary. So, yeah, their defense is not as good. And Aaron Rodgers, let's face it, he told you, he didn't play well week one. Didn't play well at all. So when I look at the Packers, I think they ultimately can get back to where they were, but they are nowhere near there now. They're not running the ball as well. David Bakhtiari is not there. Their left tackle, he's out. Corey Linsley, who's the center, who's a very good center, he's now in L.A. with the Chargers. So the reality of it is it's not the same team, and it's going to take this team just a little time to gel and get where they want to go. I don't know if they are as physical as San Francisco wants to be. See, because the last couple times we've seen Green Bay, San Francisco, Dan, it's been like, hey, let me take my little brother behind the shed and just beat the hell out of him. Like it's been a physical bloodbath. Think about Jimmy Garoppolo. They beat the Packers, and he only threw like 10 passes that game, remember? So can Green Bay step up to the physical part of the football game? That's what I want to know, because if they can't, then in the back of their minds, regardless of what the rest of their season looks like, in the back of their mind, they're constantly going to say, yeah, we're good, but if we see that team, I don't know if we can physically step up or physically handle what they do to us.
You got the Eagles and the Cowboys. You'll be in Dallas for Monday night. What concerns do you have with the Cowboys?
It's still their defense. Think about this. America's team, all the money Jerry got, and the only thing we're talking about in Dallas is a rookie defensive player in Micah Parsons. Like, where's the help? DeMarcus Lawrence is hurt. The secondary still isn't great. Your best defensive player right now is a rookie. That's a lot to ask of a rookie. Now, the offense is going to be really good. Let's face it. The offensive line led by Zach Martin, Hall of Famer, they're good. Dak Prescott, if you don't think he's a top 5 to 7 quarterback in football, you need to give up your credentials. The wide receivers, when they go three wide receivers with Gallup, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, there's not a better three in football. So the offense is going to be good. But, man, it's still the same question. Can they stop people consistently, especially with a rookie as your best defensive player?
Yeah, I just wonder. It feels like when you play for the Cowboys, you're better than what you really are. that all of a sudden, hey, you play for the Cowboys, you got to be good. And I've been saying all along, when they went 13-3, they were hiding a lot of that, you know, defensive ineptitude because they kept the defense off the field. Therefore, when they were on the field, you know, they were able to do some things. Now, you know, can they replicate that? Can they be that kind of team that wins 13 games? Therefore, you don't need to count on the defense that much, almost like the Chiefs.
Think about week one, Dan. Dak threw for 400 yards, and they lost. Okay, Dak threw it 50 times, and they lost. Think about week two. They actually ran the ball more than Dak threw it, and they won. So what you're saying is the Cowboys need to know how to play complementary football. Like, they need to know how to win games. It's not just a bit. Like, this is not Madden. This is not Meat Friday, and we're sitting around with the PlayStation 5 playing video games and eating, you know, brisket. You actually have to put together a game plan to play complementary football. So how do I protect the defense that we all agree is not very good? Well, maybe Dak shouldn't throw it every down. Maybe he shouldn't throw 50 times. And so hopefully Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy will figure that out, because if they don't, Dak will put up video game numbers, but they won't win a lot of football games.
You should stop in for a Meat Friday one of these days.
I would love to. As a matter of fact, I'm going to come to New York early on a Friday morning, and I'll land in New York maybe around 9:30, and I'll make it a point to come by. I don't even need to be on the show. I just want to come by and eat and just hang out and watch you do your thing.
What do you tell me what you want as far as the menu, and we'll try to prepare that for you.
I can tell you right now, I am a brisket sausage guy. Like, I don't really need the sausage with all the cheese and jalapenos in it. Just give me some regular kielbasa sausage. Give me a nice brisket with a nice smoke ring on it, a little crust. I don't need it fatty or lean, kind of somewhere in the middle, and just all the Coke Zero you have. And I'll be as happy as a cat going outside for the first time.
Good to talk to you, buddy. Have fun playing golf today. Thanks for joining us as always.
DP, anytime you need me, let me know, and I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you very much.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Live co-host, NBC Sports, joining us on the program. You've been fired up about this taunting rule here in the NFL. Where did this originate from? Where was the groundswell, Mike?
Well, and I'm fired up for a very specific reason. I think the NFL has done a very poor job from a PR standpoint, from an education standpoint, from a bracing the media and the audience for what was to come standpoint. This rule has been on the books since 1993. This is at least the second time in the last 8 years that the NFL has made enforcement of the taunting rule a point of emphasis, which is a fancy way of saying, hey, you officials aren't doing your jobs right. We want you to do your jobs better. We want you to be more consistent. We want you to flag Tyreek Hill when he sticks the deuces in the face of a defensive back as he's running to the end zone, because they hadn't done that consistently. So it's not a new rule. It's not a restriction on celebration. The NFL dramatically relaxed the celebration rules in 2017. This is a very specific type of conduct that the league banned 28 years ago. They're just trying to get the officials to consistently enforce it. And it drives me nuts that the NFL did not do a better job of explaining it, because it puts me in the position to have to explain it. So I bear the brunt of all the no fun league crap that they should be taking, because they should have made it more clear and understandable. And I think they would have gotten more people to buy into it if they'd done it on the front end, not try to do it on the back end. And they're not trying to do much now anyway to get people to understand it. They're just going forward.
Why don't you taunt the taunting penalty rule?
Well, I'm taunting the taunting penalty. Well,
okay.
Take that.
All right. I brought this up. People keep calling me the old man, get off my lawn. Lamar Jackson, to me, doing a somersault in the end zone, that feels like you're taunting the entire defense by saying, I'm so alone, I can flip into the end zone. Is that taunting?
Well, they're focused more on the actions that are directed at an opponent or at the sideline. It's know it when you see it. You know, I remember in 2013, they actually had to explain the difference between spinning the football generally as a show of celebration versus spinning the football at the feet of an opponent, which makes it taunting. Again, it's know it when you see it. And the problem is, the NFL leaked yesterday to Mike Jones of USA Today that 9 of the 11 taunting calls that have been made so far are accurate. Well, okay, that's fine. 2 of them aren't. That's more than 18%. That's not good. And then they won't say which ones weren't taunting. Well, why not say so we all understand what it is and what it isn't? This is what drives me crazy about the NFL. They aren't sufficiently sensitive to what it takes to get people to understand where they're coming from. And some of the coaches have done a great job of explaining this week why the rule is what it is, but that gets lost in the background. People just want to say, no fun league, and you want to keep players from celebrating, when the reality is they want to keep players from doing something that pisses off that opponent. So maybe he's looking to give the guy a little payback after the whistle the next time he gets a chance to do it.
Are the Texans tanking?
No, I wouldn't say they're tanking. They're going to win just enough games to screw up their chance to get the first overall pick. I think that they have a good team, a better team than we thought. Nick Caserio, the new GM, has done a good job of bringing in veteran players, plug and play, get them on the same page. They were more competitive last night than I thought they'd be with a rookie quarterback who had 4 days to get ready. They were very competitive against the Browns. If Tyrod Taylor doesn't injure his hamstring, they possibly win that game. They beat the Jaguars. They outclassed the Jaguars. I think they have a pretty good team, and they don't need to tank. They're going to end up with enough ammunition to get a franchise quarterback in the draft next year if they want one, once they trade Deshaun Watson. The question is, when will they trade him? But I think that there is reason for optimism if you're a Texans fan. Mm-hmm. And the schedule, look at the upcoming schedule. There aren't a lot of wins there, but this is a team that's going to go out and be competitive more often than not.
You have a column on Pro Football Talk that says Stephen Ross should do the deal he wants for Deshaun Watson. Stephen Ross, of course, the Dolphins owner. What is the deal that he wants to do?
Well, the deal is the deal that the Texans want. They want 3 first round picks and 2 second round picks, or 3 second round picks, depending upon who you listen to. But, you know, this notion that first round picks that haven't been used are treated like this magical entity and there's this great value, it's like a lottery ticket. Sometimes you scratch it off and there's nothing there. And for me, it's very simple. The Dolphins had 3 first round picks in 2020. Tua Tagovailoa, Austin Jackson, Noah Igbinoghene. You would give those 3 guys up in a heartbeat for Deshaun Watson. So why do we have this strange fascination with first round picks that haven't been used yet? So it's almost like what the Rams have done. The Rams will gladly give away their first round picks for a proven player. Stephen Ross has wanted a franchise quarterback for years now. They haven't truly had one since Dan Marino. He wanted Joe Burrow. The Bengals wouldn't give him the time of day. He wanted Tua Tagovailoa. That's not working out. He wants Deshaun Watson. You just tell your people, whatever the Texans want, go get him.
Okay, what's holding back the Texans from taking that offer?
Well, because they are confident they're going to get what they want at some point. Whatever the Dolphins have offered so far hasn't been good enough, and the Texans say, we'll either get it now or we'll get it in March. The draft picks aren't going to be used between now and March, and the risk for the Dolphins in waiting is that when we get to March, there likely will be other teams who say, we got to move on from this quarterback that we have. We got to get better. We got to do something. Let's get in the bidding for Deshaun Watson. And the next thing you know, you got 3 or 4 teams that may drive the price even higher. So I think there's value in just accepting the fact that it's going to be expensive. You get a player who's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and you finally have that franchise quarterback. And yeah, you give up some of your lottery tickets. So what? Look at the lottery tickets we just scratched off.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host with Chris Sims. I'm having a hard time understanding Aaron Rodgers with the new Aaron Rodgers, the Zen mentality. But he's got this Zen mentality, but he's certainly letting a lot of people bother him in the media. What do you make of Aaron Rodgers unplugged here after the first couple of weeks?
I always hate it when someone says to me, you're better than that. My response is, you don't know me well enough to know whether or not I am. There's a good chance I'm not. But I'd like to say that Aaron Rodgers is better than being worried about the things that people in the media say. And he had a couple of different occasions this week to talk about it. Tuesday with Pat McAfee, Wednesday at his press conference. And I think that there's a fundamental difference between opinion and fact, and he has it all kind of twisted together. And he seems just to have a level, not just of disagreement with those who would criticize him, but he's got resentment. There's almost like a vendetta. He wants to deplatform people who would dare criticize him. It's fair criticism based upon the facts as we know them to be. This isn't unfair to say when week one looks as bad as it did for the Packers, hey, maybe all this stuff going on with Aaron Rodgers plays a part in it. Maybe Aaron Rodgers isn't all in. He made a rushed decision the weekend before the start of training camp. He was 50-50 2 days before he showed up, and somehow he goes from 50-50 to 100 like that. These are all fair questions. Just because he disagrees with the criticism doesn't make them unfair questions. And yeah, he's got bigger things to worry about than what people are saying. And he acts like it's just one or two people. There's a lot of people who are saying this. He just needs to ignore it, focus on the season, think about his future at the appropriate time. But why get dragged down by the haters, Dan? Do you listen to the haters? We all have haters. Life is a hell of a lot simpler if you don't listen to them and just do your thing.
Should Kyle Shanahan have apologized to Matt LaFleur for flirting with Aaron Rodgers?
No. This happens all the time, and it amazes me when we get these reports, breathless reports. The Texans are getting phone calls for the first overall pick in the draft. Well, yeah, that's how it works. The general managers call each other all the time, and they talk about different scenarios. The reality is Aaron Rodgers was under contract and still is with the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, it was well known in league circles, wasn't happy with the Packers. And I think the bigger story here is the day before the draft, the 49ers sufficiently scatterbrained in their strategic thinking that as they're on the brink of taking Trey Lance, they think, you know what? Let's just see if we can get Aaron Rodgers instead of doing the whole take a rookie thing. That's what's amazing to me. When they should have been locked in on their plan and have a resolute approach, they decide to throw out a fishing line for Aaron Rodgers. Because clearly they would have done it if the Packers would have said yes. You don't just make a call out of curiosity. So there's no reason for the Packers to be upset about it. And there's every reason for 49ers fans to think, boy, how committed are they to Trey Lance if they were sniffing around the possibility of getting Aaron Rodgers a day before they picked Trey Lance?
Have a good weekend, Mike.
Thank you, Dan.
Let the blood pressure go down a little bit, okay?
I'm trying to give you some good content.
I know. I just worry sometimes. You know, the taunting thing. It just felt
We're trying to create
zen,
good content.
Zen,
it engages
Mike.
The audience.
Zen. Wait, by the way, what is the Halloween costume that Aaron Rodgers is growing his hair out for?
Slippery Pete. He's Slippery Pete from Seinfeld, the guy who helped George steal the Frogger machine. Look it up. Slippery Pete. That's Aaron Rodgers.
Thank you, Mike.
See you, pal.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences, loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
He's David Carr, the NFL Network analyst, former NFL quarterback. You can follow him on Twitter at DCarr8. David, thanks for joining us. What did you think of last night's game?
Dan, I mean, it was what we kind of expected. But before we get to that, I think sometimes our birthdays lose a little bit of magic as we get older. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, Paulie just gets acknowledged for having a birthday, because I know that that is sometimes it can be a source of frustration and depression when people are like, birthday. So Happy birthday, Paulie.
Paulie, you have something to say? Hold on, David. Paulie has something to say. What?
Thanks, David. You're back to being my favorite car brother again. It was Derek for a long time, and you're back.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, man.
Okay.
I appreciate that. I hope you have a happy birthday, buddy. But, yeah, you look at that game, and Christian McCaffrey, obviously, is the center point of that offense. And I was doing our show last night with LaDainian Tomlinson, great running back. He was also the center point of an offense. And I was talking to him as Christian left that game. I said, that's got to be really difficult because Joe Brady's offensive system is so geared to getting him, Christian, in position to make plays in the run game, in the passing game, and then now he's all of a sudden gone. You know, you're going to look like maybe you're not really hitting your stride against a team that you should probably be handling. So I think that was a lot of the offensive issues. They're just trying to make some work. DJ Moore, good player. Sam Darnold, I love what they're doing with him. Matt Rhule, I've known Matt Rhule since he was an assistant offensive line coach in New York, and Matt has touched every base. Like, he has his hand in the offensive line, in the defense. He knows what gives each position group trouble, and I think that's what's so brilliant just about what they're doing on the defensive side is they're basically running a college scheme, a 3-3-5. I was talking to Derek about this, you know, this summer. I was like, who's the most difficult defense schematically? He's like, the Panthers, they just create so many different issues from a schematic standpoint, and you watch them against the Saints last week. They ran the same blitz three plays in a row against Sean Payton's offense and Jameis Winston, who's a veteran quarterback, and they got home every time. And it's not just scheme, it's the personnel up front. So when I look at the Panthers, it's like you don't really expect a lot out of them, but until you really dig into it and you look at each position group and how they're kind of put together, and you can't help but like get excited for that team, even without Christian. Like, he'll come back. That hamstring hopefully won't be something that lingers all year. He'll come back in there. I think they'll be able to hold down the fort. I just like what they do schematically. I like how they're put together. I'm really happy for Sam. I think he's a good player, and they're doing what he does well. I mean, you watch him on the run and making plays after the fact. That's almost when he's at his best. So I'm excited to watch them play.
But I wonder what they do with Christian McCaffrey as we move forward. He got paid. You want to use him, but then you also know that there's this fine line of how much we use him. Are we overusing him? You almost have to manage somebody that is one of your highest paid players.
Yeah, I agree. And it is a situation where in Christian's case, he's not going to come out. I remember him a couple of years ago saying that he wanted to be in on every snap on offense. And it's like, man, I know that you love the game, but dude, you're not going to make it. And I even heard him talking in our pregame about how he has to take less hits. He has to find a way to avoid contact a little bit. So as you start to get a little bit older, you understand that, yeah, I do have to kind of conserve the body. And you hope that a coaching staff would do that for you. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there. I know that you just look at the running back position, and these guys are they're overworked. And you get a guy like Le'Veon Bell, who's basically just standing on the sideline for a team right now, who is probably one of the best running backs 2-3 years ago. You can go through the list. You can Todd Gurley, Zeke Elliott is getting his role diminished in Dallas. The shelf life just isn't very long. So what do? You know, do you just go full out? Let me give it everything I got. You know, if I kind of, you know, put yourself on a pitch count or you let the team do it, do you get maybe another year out of it? You know, I'm almost to the point where it's like, let's just max out his ability. Let's see what he can do. And then when it's over, it's over. But it's a rough world for running backs. But, man, that's just kind of the world we live in.
Yeah, but that's what I would do, David. If I'm taking a running back in the first round, first of all, I wouldn't. But if I did take one,
right,
I'm going to use him as much as I possibly can, and then I'll find another running back. I can find running backs, and I don't.
Dude, we're in the same boat on that one. I tell everybody, I'm like, I would never pay a running back. Why would you pay a running back? Just go get another one. I mean, look at what the Ravens are doing. I mean, they have great running backs. Don't get me wrong, but all those guys got hurt. Like, the Ravens season's over. Well, let's beat the Chiefs. And they're running the football. I mean, I know Lamar was a big part of that, but, dude, you can find anybody to run the ball.
I did think
that's a little harsh. Well, Daniel's going to be pissed that I said that, but you really can.
I did think of you last night as I'm watching Davis Mills, a rookie starting for the Texans. And he was going for your record of, I think you were sacked 6 times in your debut. Did that bring back painful memories for you?
Yeah, it did. The same jerseys, I mean, same stadium, different name, but it's like, and you just knew schematically, like kind of what we talked about earlier, they were going to bring a ton of different looks. And you just hope that the coaching staff would just give him some answers. And to their credit, early on, like in the first two series, they were trying to get the ball out of his hand as fast as possible. Then they realized they weren't even going to get a first down. I mean, I think I looked up at one point, and I think they had 14 plays, and the Panthers had 14 first downs. So it's like, okay, now we got to kind of try to do something here. So let's maybe step on the gas. But it's not a great situation for Davis. I actually like Davis out of school, and I think that if he would have maybe stayed another year, he may have been a first-round pick. But, you know, he's just in a tough situation. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, and I don't know what goes through your mind, because here you are making your NFL debut, and you got your friends and family, and everybody's watching,
oh, yeah.
And then you go out there, and you're like, oh, my God.
You know, you have to know, though. Like, I mean, I guess I didn't, because we beat the Cowboys the first game, and we're like, oh, this is easy. And we go to San Diego, play the Chargers, and Junior Seau's in the A-gap. Hits me 100 times, and I'm like, oh, maybe it's not so easy. You know? So, like, you think you would know, but like, you have to kind of. I'm ahead 20 years, so I have that luxury.
Who was the guy though that you just, when you saw him, you knew this isn't going to work out well for me?
It was that. Okay, I take it back. It was Junior Seau in that game, but fortunately, we didn't play them as much after that. But really, for me, it was Dwight Freeney, because I can say this now, we had no shot of beating those guys. When the Colts were rolling, yeah. We would go to Indy, and I mean, my dad came to a game, and he said, that's the last road game I'm ever going to. I'm like, Dad, why would you pick Indianapolis to come to, like, the worst possible scenario? It's like, they're going to be up 21-0. It's literally going to be a blitz fest. I remember the very first play of the game, we played Indy. They're already up 7-0, of course. We get the ball. I snap the ball. My left tackle does not even get out of his stance. You can probably go on YouTube and find this. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even move out of his stance. Dwight Freeney hits me in the back of the head. Ball flies out. Fumble. 14-0. I mean, it's just like, we didn't have a chance to play those guys. So Dwight Freeney is the bane of my existence for a long time.
How often do you think each week you have to or you feel like you need to defend your brother with – I mean, maybe not anymore, but was it a weekly process, a daily process where you had to sort of, do you stick up for your brother?
Yeah, dude. You know, it's like, to him, I would never stick up to him. I'm always kind of like going to be hard on him and whatnot, but it's like, that's my job as a big brother. But like, up until this year, it really was to the point of like, how else to say this. Like, just look at the numbers, look what he does. The problem was their defense was terrible. That's just what it was. Like, so they would never get enough possessions to be able to do, or they'd never get a stop in key situations. They'd be like, okay, we're right there. And then, you know, blown coverage. Beat Kansas City last year the first time, second time, about to beat them again. Blown coverage, touchdown, Travis Kelce wide open. Like, what's happening? So this year we get to this, you know, situation we're in now, and now all of a sudden he's a good player, you know, and people are trying to figure out, well, what happened between 2016 and right now. I'm like, well, nothing. He's just been steadily getting better. You just look at the numbers, look at him and John's system. They've been on the rise, but you know, their defense was ranked 30th or whatever they were last year. So just be, you know, Gruden talked about this. I was out there for training camp and we were just kind of, he's like, Dave, all we have to do is just give me, of course he says me, give me two more possessions, you know, with the football and we'll be fine. And I'm like, I guess if you look big picture, that's probably right. And then you look at what they did against the Ravens, strip sack in overtime, one extra possession, touchdown. Steelers, same thing, one extra possession, big play, Henry Ruggs, touchdown off of a fumble. So you're like, okay, I guess it makes sense. And then you look over the big picture throughout the entire season, that's going to add, you know, I mean, how many wins is that going to add? I guess we'll find out at the end. But offensively, they've always been – they've been there, like, since Darren Waller's been there and Gruden and those guys, and they have that type of big-time matchup guy. All these other guys, Hunter Renfrow, starting to step up. Ruggs is making more plays down the field. You know, Brian Edwards, you know, they're going to be fine on offense. It's really been defense. And Max Crosby has played fantastic. Yannick Ngakoue, another guy, battled through a hamstring injury to play against, you know, the Steelers this last week, put some pressure on the quarterback, back ends, making some plays. Casey Hayward hasn't even given up a completed pass on him this year. So, I mean, what else do you want? They got a chance now.
Okay, I want you to play the role of Tom Brady, and you're facing this Rams defense. What are you going to try to take advantage of?
So I went back and watched this game from them last year, week 11, yesterday. just to kind of refresh my memory on what happened, how they, you know, what went wrong for the Bucks. And it was really as easy as Aaron Donald. They were not able to consistently run the football and put enough pressure on them to not just play the pass. And Aaron and those guys just pushed the pocket back in Brady's lap, and he made a couple bad throws, and that was the difference. I mean, Jared Goff threw the ball 50-something times in that game. Matt Stafford is clearly capable of doing the same thing. Cooper Kupp had a huge day last year. He's going to have another one in L.A. I don't think that there's going to be anything different from a Rams standpoint on what they want to do. They pretty much did what they wanted to. They didn't even really try to run the football, because even when you do play Tampa Bay, a lot of people just don't even attempt it because they're just solid up front. They're so fast and physical, very gap sound, difficult. But you can spread them out and throw the ball. I think Matt Stafford can do that. But from a Buccaneers standpoint, I really think that they have to try to do some things to slow him down, whether it be like these little trap passes, you know, not necessarily RPOs, but some type of play action, some type of make it look like run. Because if you just drop back, Aaron Donald, I don't care how good your offensive line is, he's going to push back on that and make it difficult. Because Brady, let's say, I mean, if he's at this point, if he does have a weakness, he's going to be 7 yards deep behind the center. I mean, that's just it. At the end of the day, and good defenses know that, and they can push the pocket there, and you know he's not going to be outside the pocket doing anything fancy. So I think that's really what it comes down to in this game, is trying to slow down that push by Aaron Donald on the inside, really. Not the outside guys. Brady's stepped up and used pocket presence forever to get away from those guys, but it's the inside push that created some bad throws. I think it comes down to that.
It's great to talk to you as always, David. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us.
You too, buddy. All right, man. Have a good day.